Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel and Jumper and Comic Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Crusoe.
Hello.
Cole Hornaday.
Hey, what's going on?
And Nicole Lamb.
Oh, well, hey.
What?
Hey.
I'm bringing it back.
I think it sounds better in your mouth than mine.
We could trade off. We're the Coles.
I'm going to let you run with it for a while.
Okay.
Fly. Be free.
All right. Hey, so we're here in the lovely confines of the Comics Dungeon in beautiful downtown Wallingford, which is a suburb of Seattle. What's confusing sometimes is when I look up Wallingford, just like on Google Maps, there's apparently one in, like, Massachusetts or North Carolina. There's a
Those
Wallingford.
Cheaters.
I've seen a couple.
Connecticut,
Those dirty,
maybe.
Filthy cheaters.
I know.
Well, there's like Mount Vernon's and plenty of places.
I know.
Yeah, there's a lot of repeats.
Is it really
Salem
a suburb or is it more like a borough?
A borough?
They're the same thing. So it's a parish.
I wouldn't want to.
New Orleans is a parish. It's the same thing.
My understanding is the suburb is like the outskirts of a metropolis that eventually becomes absorbed into.
I feel like that's what we are, because downtown is like a dot, and then everything else around it is kind of the suburb to me.
But so you see downtown as the original,
like the concentrated version of the city.
I get you.
I'm gonna name this podcast the Cul-de-sac Podcast.
Yes, Cul-de-sac Cast.
Cul-de-sac Cast.
Yeah.
Stop. Turtle time.
It's a neighborhood. If we want to go back and forth amongst, you know, the semantics of a suburb, which I don't really care. But yeah, it's definitely a neighborhood of Seattle. The thing is, though, the mailing address is not Wallingford. The mailing address is Seattle. Mm.
Yeah.
And I learned that very hard lesson when I was an administrator at a business, and I was given a mailing list, and I had to mail merge a whole bunch of addresses, but the person who put the addresses together put Ballard, put Wallingford, Maple Leaf. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All these mm-hmm. different neighborhoods.
Magnolia.
And they all got sent back to the business.
Oops.
Anyway, hey, let's talk about things having to do with comic books on our comic book cul-de-sac here. And I came across this article on comicbookresources.com where DC were going to produce a hardcover collection of Shazam, the Monster Society of Evil Deluxe Edition. But they ultimately canceled that because of content concerns. And this was a 24-chapter 1940s Golden Age serial, which has, let's just say it's of its time.
Yeah.
And it has some very
racist depictions of people from other countries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that got me thinking about something that I'd like to talk to all y'all about, which I understand why DC did this. You don't want to put these sort of depictions in giant, glossy, celebratory
Right before a movie.
Yeah, there's also that. But I also countered it with what Warner Brothers did when they produced a bunch of old, like, Tom and Jerry cartoons, and a lot of their back catalog, actually, is mm-hmm. guilty of this, where they basically had a screenshot saying, look, it was bad then, it's bad now, but to erase it from history would be, I don't remember
revisionist.
The exact.
Yeah, it's like
to act like it never happened.
To act like it, which is not instructional at all.
Yeah.
Right.
And so a lot of people are like, yeah, Warner Brothers, they did a good thing. These are terrible cartoons, and I'm not going to let my kids watch them, but it's, I'm glad they did this.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, they also mentioned something, at least in the article that you had posted, that it's an example of the animation at the time.
Yeah.
So to just also get rid of that, like you can't do one or the other. You're not going to edit it down and whittle it down to something more palatable for people.
The Max Fleischer Supermans from the 30s that are absolutely gorgeous. They're in public domain now. The cartoons are, because Max Fleischer Studios no longer exists and no longer holds a copyright. But Superman is still copywritten. It's weird. However, you're not going to find them very easily anymore because, you know, there's a handful of episodes that are just like blatantly racist, either Japanese or depiction of African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And what frustrates me is that's true of so many cartoons from before my youth, even Johnny Quest,
especially
you know
of that time.
And I here's what I would like to see in something like the Shazam book is like have a scholar of color write the introduction. And then throw the caveat on there. It's like, this is, that's, to me, that would make it, if we're going to put it in like maybe even a an educational context.
Yeah.
Because, hey, let's face it, getting our hands on these Golden Age Shazam comics is, you know, in any other format is not going to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care, but at the same time, I respect the fact that, you know, maybe some of these things need to be in print because...
Yeah, I want to read what the Warner Brothers says about their cartoons. The screenshot before these Tom and Jerry cartoons says, some of the cartoons you are about to see are a product of their time. They may depict some of the ethnic and racial prejudices that were commonplace in American society. These depictions were wrong then and are wrong today. While the following does not represent the Warner Brothers' view of today's society, some of these cartoons are being presented as they were originally created because to do otherwise would be the same as claiming these prejudices never existed.
Mm-hmm.
Disney, I don't think, is taking that same tact because they are denying that the movie Song of the South mm-hmm. ever even happened.
Yep.
And I've never seen it, but I've seen clips from it.
They re-released it in the early 60s, and my mom, there was a little movie theater in St. Helens, Oregon, and we would go down and see matinees of these re-released Disney movies, and I went and saw Song of the South. And I think my mom actually still had the 45s from it, because there were some sweet songs from it. But yeah, it doesn't exist anymore. It's been erased from the canon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So going back to this Shazam reprint... how do y'all feel about them canceling the... I mean, I think that's what it says. They're canceling the entire thing.
It's completely canceled. I had to email and call a bunch of customers who pre-ordered it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For a $50 hardcover, I had like a good chunk of pre-orders.
Dang.
Because there hasn't been a version of it reprinted since the 70s, I think. And I disagree. I think they should have put the little caveat at the top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just saying like, hey, this was wrong. So just so you know, this is... educational. This is a part of history.
Yeah.
And you need to understand that. But here's this thing about a character that we're all going to know much more pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't think they should have chickened out. There's an interesting book by Will Eisner called Fagin the Jew. And it's starring a character from a Charles Dickinson story. And basically, Eisner wanted to make the book because he wanted to comment on how Jewish people were portrayed by Charles Dickens. And at the front of the book, he does a whole thing where he talks about how he portrayed black people in the Spirit comics.
Interesting.
Specifically, Midnight, the sidekick. Yeah. And he basically says, like, boy, am I really sorry about this. That's the way...
I've always been curious about that, because I can't read those. I tried to, and I can't.
And he just says, like, this is the way we did it. That's just... You're talking about a lot of young Jewish guys in New York. Some of them barely knew black people, period. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is just how everybody was depicting them, and this is not an excuse. I'm sorry for doing that. So this is what I saw in Jewish people in this other form of literature, and I want to do a piece just showing a depiction of this character. So he opened his book about it with a nice big letter saying, like, this is the reality of the time. Let's talk about it. Let's confront it.
He opened up a discussion, which is why I'm like, hey, let's have Ta-Nehisi Coates write an introduction to this Shazam book, you know. Let's put this in context, both in the past and in the present and the future, because that creates a conversation as opposed to shutting it all down like you did with Disney did with Song of the South and deny that it existed.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like I said, I am of both minds on this topic, and I am not decided. And I don't know if I feel that DC made the right call or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because I see what Warner Brothers is doing. I see your point where let's have someone address it and put it in historical context. But at the same time, like, part of me is just like, let that part die.
Uh huh.
But a lot of the people that I know who are interested in the comics like it for what the art that it was.
Yeah.
They're not sitting there going, boy, were those the days, or something like that.
Right.
So it really is in a historical context. And when you just make the decision to cancel something, you take away any choice
right.
in the matter.
Yeah.
And it may not get reprinted again. That might just be like gone too. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't excuse anything. Nobody's sitting there going, saying anything about, you know, that that was acceptable. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, having the caveat of like, you know, this is not acceptable and it's also a piece of history is, I think, important. You know, if you don't feel comfortable with that, I don't feel comfortable reading things about like from that time when they had these racist depictions. I'm just like, that's so weird. Why? You know, I'm it's foreign to me and it's weird, but I don't have to look at those things. I don't have to read those things. Nobody's saying everyone is buying this Monster Society hardcover, you know, so it's not like you're beating down somebody's door on it, you know, so it's like for the people who it's important to, they'll know it exists. They'll know it's a piece of history. And they'll either get it or they won't. But now that's all gone. So that's kind of where I stand on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have would you think that DC would be convinced to change their minds on this?
Depends who you're talking to. I want, because I don't recall in the article or any of the other articles I saw them saying like one particular person who was just like, ah, no, cut this.
Yeah.
It sounded like the powers that be, which is a thing that happens a lot.
Right.
Where you would think that the editor in charge or whatever would be able to be the guy making a decision, but they always just say, no, the powers that be. So there's some corporate head. Some matrix person on top.
Somebody made a connection like movie, this hardcover coming out, dump it.
And
you
I
know,
comprehend why that's a thing.
Absolutely.
Like your point of view mentioning that.
Yeah.
Like it is a knee-jerk reaction that makes perfect sense, but there's sometimes where you got to control your reflex, you know?
I hadn't put that together that it's because it got so, I didn't realize it got so far. Like you were able to pre-order it.
Yeah.
And so a lot of work went into this.
Yeah.
And up until that point, nobody said, you know, guys, maybe. But then, I wonder if some studio exec was we're going to have a movie coming out.
Somebody was paid to design the layout and the page count and everything on that. So some money was already spent and lost on this.
Man.
So it's just like...
That movie better be great. All right. Well, that will not be one of the books that you can read in August of this year, but
not to worry, there's a trillion other things you can read.
Vulture.com seems to think they know the best comics to read this August of 2018. And I know that we have our own list of the best comics. I'm not going to read every one of these titles. I'll just put the list in the show notes. But do we have any additions or subtractions from what Vulture says are the best comics this August?
I won't subtract anything.
Yeah. it's a weird list. It seems like a very niche, like, these are the things that Paul likes. Like, it really is, as opposed to being, like, a broad, like, these are great titles. I don't know. There's something about it that just struck me as, like, very...
Yeah.
Super
like,
niche.
These are my things, you know?
Yeah. I don't recognize... Oh, there's Jessica Jones things. Title. But other than that, nothing's, like, super...
X-23, like, but that's... That's written by
Tamaki.
Tamaki.
Is that her name?
Mariko Tamaki.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I heard of The Strange, too, by Jerome Rouillet.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, nailed it. All right.
So what about you, Chris? What do you got?
So I haven't read it yet because it came out today, which is 3 weeks in the past. but I have read other works by her, so I know it is well worth promoting. It's a series called Earth Before Us, and it's by Abby Howard, who is a... big fan of dinosaurs and other creatures of the past. And so this book is focusing as a journey through the Paleozoic era.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically her and a young girl on a field trip, and they kind of go through a magical journey through space and time to visit all these, the mid-Cambrian era and all these other creatures, and they hug animals and it's
and don't die.
They don't die. And it's pretty enchanting. So I just like it because she's passionate about what she loves, and she's a fun creator, and she draws cute little guys. So yes, that is one I would definitely push. Another one that we have not read yet, but I'm just going to say
we're all intrigued. It's the best thing we're not reading.
Yes. It's The Estranged by Ethan M. Aldridge. It just looks like a really, really engaging fantasy story with some amazing character designs. beautiful coloring, and I'm going to try and read it tonight so I can actually say on the next podcast if I was wrong or not. But yeah, I will push that.
There's a boy in there who looks like a candle.
Yep, which is a pretty cool design. Cool.
Candle boy.
Candle boy. So yeah, and besides those, I would recommend like Immortal Hulk.
Mm-hmm,
as of late,
absolutely.
And Justice League, which I reviewed two podcasts ago, and I also would recommend Bebop and Rocksteady. They've returned for another 4-issue series. They go road tripping. It's magical.
Are they in Turtle Time?
They're in Turtle Time. Yeah, you missed it. What?
Sorry, I'm getting a little tired. I guess. Yeah. Fading over here. Please forgive me. I'm old. It's late. It's hot. I slept well.
It's all of these.
Yeah, it's all those things.
And then I'll review the next book I'm going to talk about at the end of this podcast. It's not new of August, but it's new to us because it's a local creator thing. And it's called Bay O'Wolf. Bay is B-A-E. And then her last name is O'Wolf. And it's The Mystery of the Collected Mysteries, Volume 1.
it is very fun.
Yes, so that's what I got. What you got?
Right. Do you have some?
Oh, I just figured if we were going to go like real niche-y on it, like what is the thing that out of Nicole's brain that she wants you all to read that you'll never buy? Well, that would probably be Nancy in Hell, which I'll review later. Modern Fantasy, which I've reviewed on the show. Marvel 2-in-1, which I would think I'd be able to sell to more people, but surprisingly not selling it to as many people as I want. Unnatural, I've done a pretty good job of. Isola, I've done a pretty good job of. But Infinity 8, I've reviewed the first segment of that series, and it's increasingly great, and only like 5 of us are buying it, so
new issue just came out.
It's like a new iteration. So yeah, just a whole bunch. I've reviewed Crowded last time. That one was really good.
Cole, do you have any titles this month that you would like to promote?
I think Isola is a really beautiful book. I would not equate it to Saga. I don't think it has the character depth, but it definitely has the creative vision and the consistent vision of reality. I don't like the comparisons to Saga. I think it's a good book on its own. I'm kind of racking my brain. I'm agreeing with Immortal Hulk. It's a weird book right now. I'm still not certain about what it's about.
Sasquatch.
What's that?
Sasquatch.
Sasquatch is in the current issue, is that right?
Sasquatch.
Yeah. Sasquatch.
You guys are getting all weird on me.
We're getting towards the end of the podcast.
Yeah, things get weird.
Things get weird.
I'll have to contemplate it some more. I'll stop the show right in the middle of everything we're discussing in 10 minutes.
Just shout it at the top.
Hey, guys. Tom King's Mr. Miracle, which just never disappoints. I still don't know where that book's going to go.
Somewhere sad.
Yeah, it is. It is going to go somewhere sad. It's another one of those books where it's like, you know, once upon a time, this man who, you know, basically created the comic book universe, superhero universes as we know it, you know, threw all these ideas out there, and other creators came along and said, "Hey, that's really inspiring," and have done their own thing. And it's just one more Kirby property that has evolved into its own thing in the hands of another talented group of creators, and is really, really impressive.
Cool. And I'm actually going to say something because I'm reading a book right now, which I think is fairly current, which is The Comic Book Story of Baseball by Alex Irvine with Tom Coker and C.P. Smith as illustrators. And I'm going to review it in a couple weeks, but it's basically just a straight up history of the sport. And it's super fascinating, and I'm really loving it. So look for a full review coming up later on. Speaking of book report, everybody, let's move on to that.
Okay.
And Chris Casso, what do you got for us?
Beowulf. Woo! So this is by Katie Donnelly. It has contributions by other creators like Sarah McHenry, Jordan Witt, Aaron Gladstone, Aaron Kipps, Penny Candy Studios. And it is a collection of short mini comics that she sold at different conventions and stuff. And so the art style changes a little bit, of like her own art style. She's kind of evolving here. And they're just short bits featuring Beowulf, who is the world's greatest living detective. left. And they're very short, like 5 to 6 page bits, and they all have fun names. Like the first one is Beowulf and the Mystery of Where the Heck That Dang Cat Got Off To This Time, as she's hunting down her missing cat, Wiglaf, and she's going like all over the town and underwater and into space, and NASA shot her into space, and she just couldn't find that dang cat. They have fake, like, look at these other Beowulf titles, and there's, which is another one, let's see.
The Mystery of the Male Ego.
Mystery of the Male Ego is a good one. Beowulf and the Mystery of Why Everyone Loved Gone Girl So Much. And there's a great one called The Beowulf and the Mystery of Where Are the Cute Hunks, or yep. Baywatch. And it's pretty great. One of my favorite ones is Casey Brief and the Brief Briefcase Case. Encyclopedia Town and the Mystery of the Entire Town Populated by Sentient Reference Books. Schmurlock Schmolms and Oh, Why Bother Pretending? It's in the public domain. Just rip it off. And so, yeah, they're just cute little stories. There's a sentient Roomba that wants to kill people.
Yes.
There's like little dinosaur guys and monsters. It's very quick read. It's very cute. And I highly recommend it. So it's something you could only get fairly locally to the Pacific Northwest, I think. Maybe go to her website, check it out.
Does she have any website information on her comic book at all?
Nah, and the obvious place up front in the back, yes, bay/owolf.com. And you can find her at Katie Monster, Katie Monstrous. Just Google Beowulf and or
you know,
whatever.
Just Google it.
Beowulf. And it's a lot of fun. We'll be stocking it as much as we can.
Absolutely.
I heard that Bay is just like a short for babe, I always thought.
Yeah.
But apparently it stands for something. Do you know what it stands for?
No.
Beyond all else? Something like that?
Beyond all else?
Something you're making that up. I'm maybe getting that wrong,
but I didn't make that up.
Webster, right. What did you say?
Before anyone else. Thank you, Webster.
Okay, that I believe.
That makes more sense.
Sorry, one last great title. Beowulf Mystery Stories, The Haunting at Hot Boy Manor.
Yes.
So these shirtless ghosts walking around. She's got hearts around her face.
It's a cute story about her, like, finding hunks on the beach or something like that. Yeah.
Yep.
Her art style is just really fun and whimsical.
What does this have to do with Beowulf and Castle Elsinore and Grendel and all that stuff? What is it?
Maybe Grendel's a cute hunk and she's got to find him.
No, it doesn't work that way.
Aww.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Quit gatekeeping Beowulf.
Why don't you take comics seriously, Katie?
All
right.
Beowulf. Thank you, Chris. Nicole, what do you got for us?
All right, everybody. So I'm going to go into my niche land of Nancy and Hell. This was a series that happened a long, long time ago in a galaxy far away. And it was originally published by Image?
Yes, I think so.
And it was Nancy in Hell. Nancy is she is the promiscuous girl in a slasher film that dies first.
She's the last girl. Or no, wait, she's the first girl?
She's the loosey goosey one.
Oh, okay.
They usually get whacked first
in horror movies. It's a whole sex education in slasher films that we didn't know about. So she goes to hell. She is trying to find her way out of it, and she runs into Lucifer, who turns out to be like a Fabio-looking emo, crying all the time because he's real sad that like God threw him in hell and all that stuff. And she's just like, this is so annoying. So she's actually pretty smart, capable as a human, but she's, you know, kind of been discarded in that way as the girl who dies first kind of thing. So anyway, there was that series, and then there was Nancy in Hell on Earth. And then I pretty much assumed that was going to be kind of the end of it. And then I noticed that a few months ago, Nancy in Hell, The Long Road was coming out, and I got very excited. And I told my friend who likes it. So there's two of us that are like, yay! Like I said, it's very niche. It's still written by El Torres, who's been doing it the entire time. And originally the art was by Juan Jose Rip, who I love. I found him through reading Warren Ellis's Black Summer. And but this time we've got Abel Cicero doing the art, and colors by Alexandra Thone. What is the two dots over the O.
Umlaut?
But how do you say it?
Ew.
So, that's
blue oyster cult.
Oyster? Okay. This is fun.
Nagelfar.
Toenail boat. Got that one. Okay.
Yeah.
Throwing it back.
Speedish.
So anyway, so Nancy is back in hell for various reasons, and she is traveling around, and she just meets a bunch of just awful people, as you would guess. And the long road is like the road through the desert. I don't know where that place would be. You know, there's always like the Highway 666 or whatever, and it's just like flat land, horribly hot. That's where you throw all the bodies usually, but this is like some layer of hell. And anybody who wanders off of the street become the mindless ones. They pretty much become zombies. And she comes across all kinds of people. And I really like the art style in this one. Again, it's just really fulfilling on my niche thing. I know that only like maybe one other person might go, oh, that sounds interesting, out of like 300. But I really, really enjoy it. I like the art, I think, a little bit more than Juan Jose Rip, which is saying something because I love Juan. So I would recommend picking up Nancy in Hell, Nancy in Hell on Earth, and checking out The Long Road. I would hope that this would be something you could jump into, and I guess you could, but you kind of miss that element of, like, she was the slasher film girl that died. Mm-hmm. You just get, like, she's scantily clad running through hell. Mm-hmm. So you could jump in, but I think you miss a little bit of it. But it's $2.99. It's a decently priced single issue and really good art. So if you're looking for that, check it out. Thanks for listening.
Cool.
That was long.
I'm waiting for Nancy and Godzilla to team up in hell.
Oh, that would be fun. Mm. You know what? She would probably find some solace in meeting a sensible person.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Nicole. And finally, Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us?
I've got the first issue of the second series of Ed Piskor's X-Men Grand Design, and the second series is called What? Second Genesis. I love the graphic because it's actually made to look like the old school Genesis graphic.
People might actually be disappointed that it doesn't say what?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
X-Men, what?
What?
So I, the first series, that, Piskor did, sort of giving the, not really the cliff notes, but, historical, a retrospective of the X-Men. Mm-hmm. I really appreciated it. I was, his style is really unique and doesn't really fit, his style to me is more like fanographics, contemporary, independent, maybe even, dare I say, underground. But it works. And so this particular arc deals with the late 70s and early 80s X-Men comics that really put that book on the map and turned the title into a cash cow from Marvel. And it kind of gives you the highlights of the introduction of the all-new Uncanny X-Men, fighting the mutant island Krakoa, the Hellfire Club, the Sentinels, and then of course the rise of Phoenix and Dark Phoenix, and getting and covering all of that. I'm not quite certain why the series exists, other than to validate someone like me who read all of these comics as a kid and now is going back and re-experiencing them. But for me personally, it's been kind of fun to read this in conjunction with, remember, I was going on and on about Ramsey Fawaz's book called The New Mutants, where the whole discussion of X-Men as queer bodies and stuff like that. And so he was discussing these same stories. And these are the stories that put the X-Men on the mark. And made them big sellers back in the day. And these are the reasons why retailers are suffering with the X-Men now. It was because once upon a time, there were really good X-Men stories out there. Mm-hmm. the only beef I have, and this is something that I don't know, a similar series to this one was done back in 1999. It was called X-Men Children of the Atom by Joe Casey and Steve Rude. And it was a six-parter that was supposed to kind of give you, again, a retrospective on the history of the X-Men, but going back to the original Kirby Lee stories, redrawn by Rude, who is a genius as far as I'm concerned. Unfortunately, Steve couldn't finish it because he does have issues with deadlines and mental health. And I think it was finally wrapped up by Paul Smith and maybe somebody else. But here's the thing that bugged me about both the Rude Casey story and the Piskor one is that at points the artists feel feel either obliged or entitled to do a little bit of retroactive continuity where style and history is concerned. There's not solid verisimilitude. Case in point, we're back in the 1970s and the 80s and people are talking on cell phones. Weird little thing bugs the crap out of me. Mm-hmm. Also, when we meet the disco dazzler, she's not in her disco uniform. She's actually in her 80s speed suit with the star on the front and her leather coat. I'm like, no, that's not right. That's not right. That's not right.
But I think they're also kind of trying to modernize some bits.
Well, of course they are, and I don't want that.
But high on his nerd castle. Yes.
But
the man in the high nerd castle.
That's right.
So question.
No, I totally get why they're doing it. It's because they want to invite younger readers. And I'm sorry that we live in this ageist culture where it's like we can't even have our comic books be historically accurate when we look back on them. Go ahead.
Question.
Yeah.
Did this one at all feel rushed to you? Not in quality of production,
yes,
but in condensing too much?
Yes. There are parts, and I was actually trying to find it, and I didn't have time to do it, but there are stories that I remember well that we get one panel reference to.
Yeah, this one felt a little too condensed to me. And the other thing that's weird is my interpretation of the series was him taking a lot of those after-the-fact flashbacks from way later and inserting them so it all made sense.
Okay.
Like all the Dark Phoenix stuff in the first volume, because we never saw her in X-Men 1 through 60, the Dark Phoenix Force, and he put it in there.
Right.
So he completely avoids all of Ed Brubaker's Krakoa material, where they reveal that Cyclops' missing brother. And
of that was skipped.
It's just completely skipped. I'm like, but this is where you would want to put it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
all the Deadly Genesis stuff.
Yeah, Deadly Genesis.
He's done a couple of years.
So does this mean that X-Men that they're saying that didn't happen now, or is this going to be a later edition when he gets to the 2000s? And I'm like, that's a weird choice. I want to know how they're going to deal with
it. Thank you for reminding me. That's what bothered me that was omitted. I don't know when this is going to stop, and what is when the story is like. When are we going to get up to speed with the Piscor stuff? But also, one of the things that struck me about reading the Fawaz book is that his discussion stops at the 90s, like full stop. He talks about New Mutants, Bill Sienkiewicz and Chris Claremont, but he does not talk about Liefeld. And he does not talk about Deadpool, and he doesn't talk. I mean, I feel the same way.
Yeah,
but it's like,
why would you want to?
But historians at some point are going to look back on that and sort of reassess what that means to us. Mm-hmm. But we're having this backward looking reassessment for stuff that's like only 30 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what we do in American popular culture. We don't have a history, we have popular culture, and it's always consuming itself and regurgitating itself. And that's what that is. That's what this book is. It's not a bad thing. I enjoy it. What were you going to say?
Now, you think the book you're talking about, the New Mutants one, you think you'd want to maybe mention the stuff about like the first ever gay marriage in comics in Marvel? Did he talk about that?
Oh, yeah.
I thought you said he dropped it at the 90s.
He
picked and chose.
He did. Yeah. He did. Yes. Yeah.
No, that's a good pick and choose.
Yeah. No, he does. He does do a whole section on the gay marriages. Yeah. Thank you for reminding me of that. And you haven't even read the bloody book, and
no.
I did. That's a good job, buddy. Yeah. Good job. I do recommend Fawaz's book. It is an academic and dense read, but I do like the way he reassesses things. But I'm actually talking about X-Men Grand Design. I really enjoy this series, but part of it, one of the things I enjoy about it is it's taking back my childhood and revisiting this stuff the same way that the 100 Things About the X-Men You Need to Know Before You Die did. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, what was the author's name of that book?
Brian something.
Webster, edit that in later.
But, you know, it's like, I still am really close to all this original source material. So it's like, am I loving what Piscor is doing with it? Or I'm loving that we're revisiting it through his eyes.
Right.
I don't know if it really matters. I do enjoy this series. I got some beeps. I made my point.
It has been very popular in a wide range of age groups and stuff like that, too.
It's our best-selling X-Men title.
Yes.
Doesn't surprise me.
Yep.
Brian Cronin is the man.
Brian, sorry, Brian.
Sorry. 100 Things X-Men Fans Should Know and Do Before They
Now
Die.
We got to edit out you saying sorry, because who's going to edit that in?
No editing. We'll just leave it.
Oh, no. My head's going to pop.
An interesting thing about the grand design is that his original stuff that he did was the Hip Hop Family Tree.
Which I have yet to read.
And it's a nice oversized Treasury edition. They're doing Treasury editions on the grand design, which is kind of nice. You get oversized because the text is very tiny.
It is.
In those ones. And you get a nice, good...
And in the first volume of the Treasury Edition for X-Men Grand Design, they reprint the very first issue of X-Men, but he recolors it.
Interesting.
So it matches the rest of the book.
Huh.
All right, cool. X-Men Grand Designs. Thank you, Cole.
Sure.
Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your podcast at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And our friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. And this week, our questions come to us from me.
Woo-hoo.
All right. So, ProPublica recently had an article about how Marvel Entertainment Chairman Ike Perlmutter, along with two other Mar-a-Lago cronies, are shaping the Trump administration's Veterans Affairs policies. So let's pretend some comic book characters have to go to Perlmutter's VA to seek medical attention. Name the character based on the diagnostic. Number one. Patient complains of a burning sensation around his skull. Recommended treatment of copious amounts of alcohol to soothe the burn, and anti-demonic to rid his soul of Zarathos.
Is it Johnny Blaze or Danny Ketch?
It's either one. It's Ghost Rider. I'm not going to be specific. All right, number two. Sunburn appears to cover entire body. Patient assures meets his natural skin color. Recommend anti-inflammatory for oversized right hand.
That would be Hellboy.
That would be a Hellboy. Number three. Patient presents with discolored rocky rash all over body. Recommend hammer and chisel to remove.
Ben Grimm.
Yes, sir, is the thing. Would also have accepted concrete. All right, number four. Total bone replacement seems unnecessarily dangerous for patients suffering from constant and intentional compound fracture of the knuckles. Recommended treatment is a nice spa day to relax away from enemies.
Logan?
It is Logan. Wolverine. Number five. Patient is prescribed a series of rabies shots due to occupational hazards and is recommended conditioner to prevent split ends in her tail.
Squirrel Girl.
It is Squirrel Girl. That is quiz time. And that is our show.
Brilliant.
Thank you for listening. We will see you next week.